Houston's most interactive and possibly radioactive sports talk show continues now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Jordan Alvarez, 37 home runs in season, 97 RBIs. The pitch swing and is a high fly left field. Driven back. Now it's headed for the Crawford boxes and is gone. He's done it again. Alvarez to the opposite field. A two-run shot here in the sixth inning.
Jordan Alvarez. That was sick. He's been awesome this series. It's one of the best performances we've seen by a Houston athlete in terms of just being completely terrifying to the opposition, I think, since going all the way back to Carlos Beltran, to Hakeem Olajuwon. We've been talking about that all morning. And now we welcome Josh Innes to the show. Josh, what's going on, buddy? Joshua, I can't hear you, so I'm singing to filibuster right now. That's what we do. When you got to do something impromptu, you just sing and sing some more. Hi, Josh.
Hey, what's going on, Paul?
Not a lot. What's it like watching this on the outside?
Well, you say watching from the outside. I consider myself to be on the inside.
You feel still. In the inside? Okay.
Yeah, I'm on the inside. You know, I'm still I'm a Houston guy. I cut for the H, as it were. So
you put on for your city?
For my city, bro. So it's all good.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. We were talking about this in the last segment, and I saw a couple of tweets that you had about it. Do you think that Carlos Correa is, in that interview that he did with Jeremy Pena, being jealous, condescending, actually feeling good for Pena? What do you think was going through his mind there?
Well, the last thing I do not believe that he feels good for Jeremy Pena. Now, understand, I do not know this for a fact, so this is just my theory. I do not want to get sued for $1 billion. So just understand that this is my conspiracy theory, if you will. It's not even a theory, it's just an opinion.
Okay.
So I don't think you can sue me for a damn opinion, but whatever. So here's what I say. I think that Carlos Correa is not happy for the guy being successful because I base things on how I would feel. And how I would feel is I hate everyone. Therefore, if he thinks anything like me, like let's put it this way. Like, let's say that if, like, when I was at 6'10", you and I were at 6'10 together, I left and I went to Philadelphia. If I would have been struggling in Philadelphia, and whoever it was, I forgot who replaced me whenever I left there, but whoever replaced me when I left there went in and got, like, double what I was doing, I'd be very mad about that and upset because I'm like, maybe I shouldn't have left. Maybe I made a mistake, you see. And I think what we're dealing with old Carlos Correa here, as he says, hey, the grass is greener. I'm going to go on over to Minnesota, which everybody knew wasn't going to work. You knew they were going to suck, which they did. And he goes over, says, I'm going to play here for a year and go try to get a bigger deal somewhere. But I don't need Houston. I don't need the people there. I do not need that team. Well, imagine you're sitting there watching your former team with the guy who they brought in to replace you is doing what you would have been doing had you stayed. It is impossible to be happy for that person, at least in my eyes, because I'm a bitter, horrible human. Maybe he's different, but I find it hard to believe because I think that's human nature to root for your replacement to fail, unless you're doing better than they are. Like, if you were also in the playoffs, it's easier to go, hey, good job, Pena. Good job, Jeremy Pena. When you're sitting in a studio talking to Ernie Johnson and a bunch of other baseball players, well, friend, that makes it a lot easier to be bitter, and I believe he is bitter about it.
Josh Innes is with me. So let's play with this hypothetical. Say you had the chance to interview someone who had replaced you. What's the question that you're going to ask? I thought that Correa did a pretty good job of keeping things as rosy-seeming as possible and trying to hide that. But we're both the same. We both feel like he's probably thinking at the very least a little bit of something on the inside. But anyway, bringing it back to you. If you're in that spot, if you're Carlos Correa and you're getting to ask Jeremy Pena a question, what would you, hater of everybody, ask him?
Oh, boy, this is great. So let's put myself in that position. Like, when I left 6'10", I honestly don't remember. Did they put on Sean to? Yeah, Sean.
I think it was Sean and Rich, and then they brought Ted into afternoons eventually, which is how I got at.
Here's what I would have asked, and this is a total dick thing to say, but fine. because I was doing well for myself in Philadelphia. So if in this odd situation I had to interview the people who replaced me, I would have said, "What is?" And now I'm interviewing who in this situation? The whole show or just Sean in this case?
You're interviewing the specific person who replaced you. You are interviewing the Jeremy Pena to your Correa.
And then eventually Ted Johnson was also in there too. Okay, so here's what I would have said. I would have asked first question, then like, there would have been a two-part. The first part would have been, how does it feel to know that you wouldn't be at this legitimate radio station had I not left?
Oh, my God.
You still would have been talking to the cows on 1560.
Hey.
That would have been my first. So, you guys don't own 1560 anymore. It doesn't matter.
Glory days.
Like
listen.
Chinese people.
I don't step on that. People seem to think that was a good time. I've never actually listened to it, but I heard it was a great time.
By the way, that's not what this is. Don't turn this into a 1560. I'm not ripping the station. I'm just letting you know that at the end of its run there, it wasn't doing
Hey, Josh, well. I'm putting on for my brand, okay? You're putting on for your city.
Wait. That's not even your brand anymore. It doesn't matter. So then there'd be a follow-up to that. And again, this is a hypothetical. I have nothing against Sean. But you ask me, bitter, angry, I could be doing the greatest in life. I could be having the number one radio show while, like, Jessica Alba is writing my mustache. And I would still be like, I got to go to Twitter and talk trash about the guy that took my job. Mm. So I'd be like, all right, that's the first question. Then the follow-up to that would be, how does it feel to know they had to add Ted Johnson to the show, and it took two people to replace me.
And I would love to
Josh,
see that.
That came very fast, and it did because I've thought about that since 2013.
We got off your chest. Look, I'm being your therapist.
I don't view this as a therapy thing. You just asked me, hey, like how does pain you feel, or how does Correa feel, and how I would have felt, and what I would have asked in that situation. See, me, I am just a more bitter person who likes to start ish, I guess, right? So that's more of what I do. Like, Correa handled it fine, but it's a weird spot to be in. See, here's what I want, right? And I talked about this on the Josh Ennis Show podcast, which you can download wherever you get podcasts.
Professional.
I talked about this on my pod last night. I would have preferred this happen to in a situation where Inside the NBA guys were hosting this and not all these baseball players. Because the Inside the NBA guys would just trash Correa the whole time and bust his balls about how that used to be him. And these baseball players are way too nice.
Who was on the panel? Because I was at the game, so I didn't actually get to see it. I
was
curious.
Let's see.
Was Poppy and A-Rod there? Because I do think that as far as the studio shows go, that when they have those two guys there, I'm not saying it's like Inside the NBA. Nothing's ever going to be like that. But I've always felt that those two in the same room together has made for pretty compelling studio show antics, if you will. Because most of these shows, especially the NFL ones, are just like chuckle sandwiches with a Michael Bay-esque panoramic camera going around in a circle.
I don't believe that. Well, I know A-Rod wasn't there, and I don't think it was Poppy. I think it was Curtis Granderson was one of them. Correa, Ernie Johnson, Pedro, and there's some other dude who was so uninteresting, I guess, that I don't remember who he was.
It was not a good day.
So, yeah, nobody interesting was on there. Now, if that were like Charles Barkley would spend the whole show making fun of the fact that this fool, as he would probably call him, this fool left the Astros. Now you're sitting here with us.
Mm.
And that would have been more interesting than these guys just grab-assing each other and being friendly.
Josh, it is with me right now. Let's shift back to Yordan Alvarez. This series, I don't understand why anyone would ever pitch to him. I understand there are arguments to be made by those and maybe the analytical community that you just don't intentionally walk anybody anymore. I don't know. Yordan is in that territory now, and it's funny that Dusty Baker after the game made a Barry Bonds comparison. For this series right now, he should not be pitched to again. Can you think of an athlete that you've watched that has been playing on a level like this? And I know it's been two games, so maybe it's too small of a sample size. But right now, he feels like the most destructive force in all of baseball.
That would be Carlos Beltran in the playoffs in, was it 04 or 05? I get them mixed up. But that year that Beltran played out of his ass and got paid big time by the Mets, I just remember vividly that series with the Cardinals where diving catches, stolen bases. Actually, I talked about this on the Josh Ennis Show podcast last night, in which you can download wherever you get podcasts. But I was trying to think of a comparison, too. And I was thinking about Carlos Beltran. And Beltran's different because he's a five-tool guy. He's a stolen base guy. He's a much better fielder than Alvarez. Like, he was a stud, like five-tool stud player. Alvarez is more of your traditional power hitter, right? Like, not a great outfielder, kind of lumbering in the outfield. He's fine, but he's kind of a lumbering presence.
He's surprisingly
type of guy,
like effective as an outfielder. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, you're not expecting him to do a whole lot, and he kind of, because you have that very low expectation for him in the outfield, when he does something, you're like, oh, wow, he lumbered over there, and he actually made that catch.
When he threw the guy out in game one, people talked about it like it was Lance Berkman making that over-shoulder catch over.
But it's because of the lowered expectations. Like, I get what you're saying. It's not the most impressive thing in the world, but at the same time, for him to do that, it is impressive, if that makes sense.
So, I mean, it's been two games, so, I mean, he's had two big moments in two big games, and that's great. But, like, right now, it's not really close to what you got out of Beltran in that series. Mm. Like, Beltran, not only a series, but Beltran did it through an entire playoff up until the LCS.
And you mean on the defensive side of things,
too. I think that was the one that ended in seven.
Okay.
So that would, I think that would have been an 0-4.
Right.
I think was the year that Beltran was.
So, we had a couple people commenting earlier about Beltran back then. So I think that, yeah, you're definitely right about that. And I think that's a fair argument, too, because Beltran was doing it all over the field as opposed to just at the plate. It's weird with Alvarez, though. Like, you could easily just take him out of the game by throwing around him. And, I mean, finally Scott Servais does it. And what's funny is it came to bite them in the ass because Alex Bregman hits the single afterwards. But, I mean, he is in that conversation right now just from a straight feeling standpoint. And I feel like managers should be allowed to have feeling impact the decisions that they make in a game. I would intentionally walk in with the bases loaded, and I would feel okay about it.
Well, I mean, that obviously depends on the score and everything else, too. But, like here's the interesting, like, let's say somehow this came up in the second inning, and they have the bases loaded in a nothing-nothing game. I would agree with you that I would walk in.
Yeah, I would, too.
But here's why I wouldn't. Here's why I wouldn't, though. Because Bregman. And Bregman is a great hitter who sees the ball better than anybody and has better plate appearances, arguably, than anybody on the team. So if Bregman were hitting 080 and hadn't hit for a month, then maybe you do that. Let's say you walk in a run, bases are still loaded, and Bregman hits the first pitch oppo like he did last night, and then you're down 4-0. So I get that. Let me throw in one more at you. So, and this is just one that came to my mind of a guy that was hot for an entire postseason. Mind you, this is just two games we're talking about here. David Fries in 2011. Mm. David Fries was the LCS MVP.
Yeah.
He also hit the walk-off, the tying hit in Game 6 and the walk-off in Game 6. And I believe he was the World Series and LCS MVP that year. So, like, it's happened before. Like I'm not trying to downplay the significance of hitting these two homers. But let's also be honest that it's two games. He could.
Yeah.
I mean, Correa had stretches in the playoffs where he had monster hits in the division.
I think, like, the fact that it's such a small sample size, but that they're right back-to-back with one another makes it feel a lot bigger than it actually is. And I think that's very fair. Like, if we're talking about entire series, there are other guys that you can throw in there. And, of course, you talked about Beltran a little bit earlier. But I just feel like, though, from this very small sample size, I would be scared bleepless if I were pitching against him. And, I mean, shoot, now that he has taken out Luis Castillo with an opposite field home run and he has the walk-off home run, if you're any Mariners pitcher, like, I would be nervous to throw a ball outside the strike zone to him, because I would think in the back of my head, wait a second, what if I miss a little bit? What if I don't have it on the corner? What if I actually put a sinker on the inside on the outside corner 4-yard on Alvarez and he's able to club it to the opposite field? That right now, I don't feel in the Astros run with all of those World Series appearances and the five straight American League Championship Series appearances, I never felt like one of those guys was head and above better than the entire rest of the team. Where right now I do feel that, even with, as you mentioned, Alex Bregman having a pretty good series to this point.
Well, I mean, but he could go 0-for tomorrow and 0-for in the first game of the LCS, and then it's all for naught.
Don't put bad energy out there, sir. Please don't.
Well, I'm not rooting for it. Don't homer me. I'm just saying.
I'm putting on for my city.
Like, we're talking about two games. It's two games, and I think they were made bigger by the fact they were trailing in both of those games, trailing big in one of them, obviously, so that plays a big factor. But, like, here's what I hate, is when you give, like, a strong opinion on something that's positive, and then someone is so far over the top positive that your positive opinion sounds like you're hating.
Yeah,
and that's what
you've
done to me. And I will not tolerate that sort of tomfoolery.
It's gamesmanship, sir. It is gamesmanship. Is this series done? Do you think Seattle wins one of them?
The series was done after game one.
Do you think it'll be a sweep is what I'm saying? Saturday, is it done?
They're not winning the series.
Okay. They're not winning the series, but Saturday, is it over? Do you think Seattle has one last one left in the bag? Because they have kept it close. I mean, you tweeted it out yesterday. Considering what happened in game number one, that they hung around the way that they did, I feel like it does deserve some merit. Maybe the bats falling asleep is not a good sign for Saturday, but they have at the very least had balls, which I didn't know that they would have after a choke job like you saw Tuesday.
Well, Lance McCullers is pitching, and Lance, if he doesn't bitch about the weather or something, he'll probably pitch well. But if he bitches about the weather or having to pitch outside or whatever else he bitches about, because that's all he does, then maybe Seattle has a chance. But if Lance just goes out there and doesn't concern himself with the elements, which is just being outside, then I think they probably go and mow him down and the series is over. If it didn't kill you after game one, blowing game two should kill you.
Yes.
So it's probably over, and I think it's done tomorrow.
He is Josh Innes. Check out the Josh Innes Show podcast. Josh, thanks, buddy.
See you later. Bye.
He is Josh Innes, everybody. It is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. What Yordan's done, where would you put it on par with in terms of dominant stretches? I still think it's high up there. I understand what Josh is saying there, though. It has only been a couple of games. I just think these two games, holy crap. I feel like he's going to do another one on Saturday, too. I think these dummies are going to throw to him again. That said, any concerns over how hard this series has been to this point? 713-780-3776, again, is the number on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
If you haven't subscribed to the Paul Gallant Show podcast already, I highly encourage you to do so. You should go back to 10:30 if you want to know for sure where I'm leaning between the Astros and Mariners. I don't have another rant in me like that one again, but
it's worth a listen.
I appreciate that, John Belmer behind the glass. The hat I'm wearing right now is a Houston Astros hat. I'm wearing an orange shirt. I feel like I should have to say no more. But again, you can go check it out. Also very funny on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston to see what happens whenever Josh comes on. Because you'll get some texts that are essentially like, oh my God, like you can't keep it in your pants when he's on. And then other people are like, I hope he dies. It's a very wide-ranging like reaction to it. One text. Only this douchebag would find something negative to say about Yordan Alvarez right now. What a bleeping prick. This dude just blabs about himself all day. He loves him some him. Well, I love me some me too. What'd you think about that? Maybe this is for you. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. So it's been close this series. And I mean, there was a moment yesterday in game number two where I started thinking to myself, uh-oh, maybe the Mariners are going to be able to split things. This took place in the fourth inning where Framber Valdez is trying to make a play, and we got cut ready to go. Cut number five ready to go. Framber Valdez is trying his hardest to save a run here. It did not go so well.
Valdez trying to wiggle out of this jam. And the southpaw fires home. Swung on, a little trickler back to the mound. Picked up by the pitcher. He'll throw home and right pass. Maldon out of the catcher. The run is in.
I'm thinking to myself right there, uh-oh, okay, we'll see where this goes. But, I mean, Castillo had been pitching well outside of the home run that he allowed to Kyle Tucker to that point. You're thinking, how are they going to chase him from the game? It's probably going to have to be Yordan, huh? And, I mean, again, with the way that the Astros offense was going, I don't think that the Mariners, with two outs, should have pitched to Yordan. I'm still struggling with that one. What are you doing? Jeremy Pena, you just set the table. Walk him. I get it. Like, Alex Bregman's been playing pretty well in this series, too. But he had the home run in game one. So maybe you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, what happens if Bregman's at the plate? Sorry, I'll take my chances with Bregman over Alvarez. Even with Bregman being so damn patient and disciplined. And I think he got asked about it after the game. Like, do you feel disrespected when someone intentionally walks to get to you? Like, you shouldn't. Yordan is on another planet, at least through these first two games, and with what you saw from him in the last week of the season or so. Scott Servais is the manager of the Seattle Mariners, and he's still maintaining that this is a series. He has to. He's the manager of the team. But I don't think you're going to like these comments. Here's Scott Servais yesterday after the game.
You know, this game's a game of inches. They had a few things go their way today, and that happens. We did not. My bet is it'll probably flip when we go to Seattle. But that's just, you have to find a way to grind through that and still, you know, figure out a way to win those games. It didn't happen today. But we have played very good baseball. I do know how hard it is to win on the road, and it'll be very hard for them to win in Seattle. I will tell you that, because I know what it's going to be like when our crowd gets going on Saturday night.
Hell yeah.
Saturday afternoon, I guess.
Nice little pander job at the very end of that. I know what it's like when my crowd gets going. Hell yeah. It will be loud. I will give M's fans credit. They do show up. And no offense to the Astros fans out there, but when you start winning, your crowd becomes a little bit cake-eatery. I know this as a Patriots fan. Patriots fans, like at Gillette Stadium, that is a church. It is quiet as hell. That's what happens when a team wins and wins and wins and wins and wins. Like, you don't want it the same way. That place will be loud. And I'm not going to lie, I feel like they bring it on a level noise-wise that the Astros fans don't. It's been, for the most part, and there were some great moments yesterday and there were some great moments on Tuesday too, but for the most part, I, as someone who has been there, there have been a lot of quiet moments at the ballpark of unease and uncertainty outside of the Yordan Alvarez home runs and, of course, the end of yesterday's game. I'm having a hard time seeing Seattle bouncing back from another just punch to the nads like this. Because that's what it is. I mean, Castillo was pitching great, and then Alvarez just takes him yard. What else is there for Seattle to bring out of their chest of weapons? You know, what's left? I actually know the answer to that. If you've been watching Seattle this season, you would know that they are a pugnacious bunch. And sometimes that they use fighting as a means to jumpstart the team. Lock of the century. Yordan Alvarez will be thrown at in Seattle. Lock it up. And I'm not going to lie, I can't wait to see the fireworks that unfold after that, because these teams don't like each other. John Belmer, you have a thought.
Yeah, what kind of punch do you think Yordan can throw? How hard do you think that punch is, man?
I would not want to go anywhere near Yordan Alvarez if he were punching me. But that said, John Belmer, you've been paying attention over the last couple of weeks of the year. Unlike Dusty Baker, who's not sure which hand Yordan Alvarez hurt. What happens if Yordan Alvarez swings, connects, and hand injury.
Yordan, if you can hear me, throw an elbow, okay?
Yordan needs hold him back, guys.
Very true.
Yes. So, and that's going to be hard. He's a big guy. It's going to be hard. So, Mauricio Dubon, Justin Verlander's personal valet center fielder. Hey, I got a job for you. I saw what you did. I saw what you did after that walk-off home run. I saw you on the steps of the dugout with a cold glass of refreshing water, I think, for Yordan when he stepped into the dugout. I saw what you did. You are a team player. You are used to the service industry. Of course, being, you know, again, Justin Verlander's personal valet center fielder. You got to figure this one out. This is on you. You have to make sure that Yordan Alvarez doesn't go ape bleep all over the entire Mariners team. Because I also feel like Yordan would be able to kick the ass of three or four guys. That is like, he is put together in a way where if there is a bar fight going on, that is the person I 100% want in my corner. You know, he doesn't, he's not like one of these like muscle bound guys that looks like he's just taking things way too seriously at Gold's Gym and maybe has, you know, a couple of steroid injections here or there. No, he's just like a big, brawny dude. And I feel like that's exactly the last person that you want to mess with in a fight. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. Lock of the century. The Mariners are going to throw at him. I'm hoping that he keeps his cool. But would you, if someone threw at you after you hit a home run and you're flipping the bat, you know why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends. You know, if it's, you know, my butt or something like that, like I can turn and get, if it's at my head, yeah, I might lose my mind.
Let me tell you a story, John Belmer, behind the glass, about Paul Gallant's eighth grade baseball career. I know, that's what you guys are all here for, right? Trust me, it's actually a good story. So in sixth grade, I was out at baseball practice once. Two kids started playing catch with a bag that had my wallet in it. I had a baseball bat. It was a bad decision by them. Let's just say that. The person who was closest to me, sorry, I hit him in the thigh.
Gangster Paul.
It was a bad moment. My parents were going through a divorce. I was not handling it well. Hit the kid in the thigh. Got suspended for a day. Got a detention. It was bad. Like this was, I had like a lot of anger management after that, and I got a lot better. But that was like, that was basically rock bottom for my anger. I'm 12 years old. You could explain it away. No, it's an embarrassing moment in my past. But anyway, 2 years later, I'm in a baseball game. Someone throws a ball at my head, goes over my head. And here's this little 5 foot nothing, like 90 pound kid. He's like staring him down like. And what's funny is like everyone on the other team's like, who the hell is this guy? This little tiny little twig. What's he going to do? But everyone on my team was like, oh, Paul's crazy. You got to watch out for Paul. So the very next pitch, he throws it again, goes over my head. And I'm like, are you serious? Third pitch hits me in the head. So, again, the boy was working on his anger management at this moment in time. I took 4 steps out of the batter's box with the bat in my hand, dragging it like it was going to be some sort of weapon before 3 people got in my way. And they walked me down to first base. Story's over, right? No. This is the biggest regret of my sports playing career. I get to third base. Somehow, some weird middle school baseball stuff happens, and I get caught in a rundown between home plate and third. All of a sudden, it is just the pitcher who is standing at home plate. And I turned around and ran back to third base because I was trying to beat the rundown. I could have run him over. I still think about this moment every so often. Anyway, that is Baseball Paul. Yordan Alvarez, do not use the bat when someone throws at you. Do not get suspended. Do not hurt your wrists. It is coming. Watch out. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in. To text in too, you can tweet me at Gallant, says twitch.tv/ESPN97.5 to watch and to listen. Yordan Alvarez is playing like insert Houston athlete X, because the last 2 games that we've seen from him, I think he's the most terrifying force that we have seen in Houston sports in years. But I got a couple other examples for you next. It's the Paul Gallant Show, most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Astros up 2-0 on the Mariners. Let's go.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're locked in with the Paul Gallant Show.
You're locked in here with me.
Please send help from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
Yordan Alvarez, 37 home runs in season. 97 RBIs, the pitch swing, and there's a high fly left field. Driven back, now it's headed for the Crawford boxes, and it's gone! He's done it again! Alvarez to the opposite field, a 2-run shot here in the 6th inning.
How do you come back from that? Scott Service, though, he says the Mariners crowd's going to be loud! It's going to be dangerous! It's going to be loud. But as a bunch of people have pointed out on the Twitch or on the text line, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. It's like the Astros have been doing this for a while. They have dealt with some damn hostile crowds. I mean, shoot, let's just go all the way back to 2017, where you're playing Boston, you play New York, you play the Dodgers. Dodgers crowd, it shows up when it's a big-time game. A little bit salty, salt of the earth people in that crowd. And ever since then, they have not been liked. And then the cheating scandal happened, and I get it. I get it. There was a year that they played where there was no fans in the stands. But generally, because of how hated this team is, you are going to get the absolute most from a crowd every single game that they play. The idea that the crowd is going to affect the Astros in any way is funny, because I think the only way it affects it is it's going to bring out their best. One of my favorite quotes by Paul Pierce, who's one of my favorite basketball players ever, played for my beloved Boston Celtics, was he said, like, I like playing on the road. You know why? It's great to shut up a loud crowd. These guys like doing it too. And it's going to be something else to see. I remember, shoot, I think it was the what game? What day was it? But it was the game in early July where I went to. That was the game that I wore the split Astros Mariners shirt to. And I remember, I think Yordan hit a home run like right away, and the game was done. Like, it was over right from the start. First couple of at-bats of the game. I remember that happens, and I'm like, yep, okay. Well, so much for this really loud crowd that was getting hyped up going into the series, as a couple of people are bringing up on the comments. Big Art asks, no Mariner watch for how hard it is to win on the road, especially in the daunting T-Mobile Stadium. I mean, Mariner's watch would be fun, but here's the thing. Mariner's watch guy killed himself. He died. That was it. It's over. I mean, he might come back. If they win on Saturday, maybe he comes back. If he wins on Sunday, maybe they come back on Monday or something like that. But no, he's dead. He died. R.I.P. It's a nice life. But all it took was to walk off home run and blowing a 4-run lead. It's too much for him. It's interesting seeing the spin zone, too, by a couple of Mariners fans online. Some people are doing a better job of looking this up than I am. Prestige Worldwide 713 said of this tweet by @MaxC_206, before the Twitter wars begin, dear Astros fans, no Mariner fan expects to beat you guys. You aren't an underdog. And no, the Mariners will not throw at you on purpose. I don't know. I don't know, Jim. That's my Tony Romo. Thanks for listening to my TED Talk. That's BS. You can't come into this series and say, like, hey, like, we don't expect to win, so leave us alone, okay? No, that's not how it works. Nope. The Mongolians are at your gates. You want to bring out some tribute? We might not do anything, but we might. I was listening to one of those hardcore history podcasts by Dan Carlin, just talking about how the Mongols would essentially like, hey, give us all your tribute. And then they would get all the tribute, and then they'd still kill everybody. Just absolute menaces to society. Just completely, completely twisted with how deep. And essentially it was like, hey, do what we tell you. Just fall in line, and things will be okay. But a lot of people were like, we're Christians, and you're not. So kick rocks. And then they would just go into the city, kill everybody, and stack their skulls like in pyramids. No big deal. They had like a really efficient way of killing people like in mass too. It's like it's really messed up. I'm not trying to sound like I'm glorifying the Mongolians here. But the Astros in their own way are kind of like the Mongolians. Minus the genocide. A little different. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me at Galan Says. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. What we have seen out of Yordan in these first two games, from a feeling perspective, this has been the most, I think, to the opposition, terrifying figure that a Houston sports team has offered since probably Carlos Beltran back in 2004, 2005, around then. Hakeem Olajuwon, 1995 in the Western Conference Finals against the San Antonio Spurs, where he's averaging 35 points a game. Go a little bit further back than that. Mike Scott in the 1986 playoffs, with how dominant he was, at least until the very end against the Mets. Although I think that wasn't his issue, because it wasn't Game 7 like 18 innings or something crazy like that. Maybe that was Game 6 off the top of my head. Sorry, I don't remember. I wasn't alive, you see. I'm not even sure my parents were together at that point. Doomed marriage. Who would have thought? But I'm really curious as to who else you think is in that conversation. That's been on the table all day long. And I'm also curious as to if you think that the Mariners have even a slight fighting chance. It has been really hard. It has been like pulling teeth to win these first two games, regardless of whether or not the Mariners are bummed out, playing everybody hurts in the locker room, the clubhouse. I mean, it has been one of those series where every single pitch has felt very, very laborious. And maybe it doesn't have me nervous about this series right now, but I am curious about how this team would potentially look in a World Series against, say, the Dodgers or Braves. Both those series, by the way, tied at one game apiece. Or against the Yankees, who we're going to get to hate watch this afternoon. They're playing at, I guess, is it at noon? I think it's a 1:05 Eastern time, a noon Central time first pitch for the Yankees. And Guardians, we're guards. Not the best nickname in the world. I feel like they could have thought of something else. Junior Broncos on the Twitch says, Yordan's home run is going to set the M's back a decade. I'd like to say that. I don't think so. I think the Mariners will be back next year, assuming that they go bye-bye over the course of this weekend, whether it's Saturday or Sunday. But Saturday seems to be the more likely date. That said, I don't think they are going anywhere. They have, I think, done a very good job of building that team back up. And Jerry Dipoto, who was not very good as a roster constructor when he was in L.A., I think he's done a damn good job with the Seattle team. I really do. It's really a matter of whether or not they're going to be able to get the most out of Jared Kelnick, who you saw have a pretty big hit against Justin Verlander on Tuesday. Mainly big because I was thinking to myself, I don't know that he can walk correctly. Like, things have just been so weird for him ever since being this super hype prospect and getting pissed off about the fact that they were holding his service time against him. Maybe they should have held the service time against him a little bit more. 713-780-3776. We got Juan. Juan, what's going on?
Hey, love your show. The funny thing about the Astros is, like you said it, they're used to, you know, horrible audiences. But the coolest thing about the Astros is that they do better historically on the road than they do at home.
Mm.
And so the number one thing is, they can close it out without a doubt, because they still – the only thing that I can see that could be dangerous, they always do get kind of weird with rookie pitchers.
Mm.
But other than that –
what do you mean? The Astros get weird with rookie pitchers? What do you mean by that?
Like, every once in a while, a no-name pitcher will make them look like they're Cy Young, but they hit Cy Young pitchers, which is the funny thing about the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, look, they hit everybody, and appreciate the phone call, Juan. I think I know where you're going with on that one. Look, the lineup is not as dominant as it has been in years past. I think we have to acknowledge that, especially when you get to the bottom. They're still trying to tinker. And you saw yesterday where they removed Trey Mancini from the lineup altogether. He didn't even get in. I wonder if he gets in again, the rest of this series, because it's just not looking good, you know? Like, I'd rather have David Hensley pinch hit. And David Hensley did pinch hit for Jake Myers. I hope the Jake Myers experiment is done too. That wasn't gonna work. 0-for-2 strikeouts. Like, what was that? You know, I'm not saying put Mauricio Dubon there, but come on. Get back to Chas McCormick and get back to Chas McCormick as soon as possible. The bottom of the order. Aledmys Diaz at the designated hitter spot, I'm good with that again. But yesterday, between Martin Maldonado and Jake Myers, you're 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts. So, I mean, that's going to be a problem. That's the one spot. And I wonder if there's some staggering that can be done. Do you move Jeremy Pena back in the lineup? Not because of how he's doing. He's doing great. I mean, he's been great in the two spot. Do you move him back? You would think, though, that Pena, with the way that he's been playing, is going to help Jose Altuve, who, shockingly, has yet to get a hit in 2 games. I did not see that coming. I figured at some point we would see, at the very least, a hit from Altuve. Credit to Altuve, something that we did not discuss a lot, though. Altuve's 2 web gems in this game, I mean, he was making plays from essentially left center field. We're talking about it from my perspective. But he was making a couple of plays out there, and you're just like, how the hell did he pirouette and turn it around and get it all the way back over to first? How the hell did he do that? Really impressive what he was able to do. Seriously. I know that at the plate it hasn't been what you want, but damn, the guy's still a damn good fielder. And defensively, bullpen-wise, like, all the boxes have been checked. And honestly, if I'm talking about the 3 biggest questions I had about the Astros going into this postseason, it's whether or not Framber Valdez is going to be able to shake off the postseasons of the past. Valdez had a good enough start yesterday. I would like a little bit better, but I feel like, especially reading those articles that were in The Athletic and written by Brian McTaggart of MLB.com, when things started to spiral, I do feel like he did a pretty good job of hanging in there. You know, they kept him in for an inning and 2/3 more after, you know, the way that things went in the 4th inning. And then afterwards, I mean, shoot, you haven't even used Ryan Stanek yet. You haven't even needed to, I guess. Baker's been making some great decisions, Dusty Baker, when it comes to who he is using out of the bullpen. And made some good pinch hitting decisions too. And the defense, I mean, you had a great catch by Kyle Tucker at the wall on Tuesday. You had Yordan Alvarez making a nice catch, making a nice throw from the outfield too, gunning a guy down at home plate. Like, defense, the bullpen, the pitching, outside of Justin Verlander, it's all been pretty damn good. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show. 713-780-3776 to call in or text in on the HRNP listener line on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. We got some final thoughts and some positive vibes going into the weekend. It's a Friday. Friday, got to get down on Friday, and the Astros are up 2-0 in the ALDS on the Seattle Mariners. Don't go anywhere.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You know how to get aboard the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. A couple of comments on the Twitch. No one is a fan of Jake Meyers. I really, for the life of me, can't figure that one out. Sorry to labor on this one, especially after the Astros did beat the Seattle Mariners yesterday, 4-2. But, like, no more Jake Meyers. He hadn't played in a while. Why do you think he would be a good idea to put him back out there against Luis Castillo? Yeah, we think he's got the best chance to hit against Castillo. Why? Based off of what? Weird. Weird decision. The one move that I would question by Dusty Baker to this point, in addition to continuously playing Martin Maldonado as much as they do. I think that Christian Vasquez deserves some playing time. I think that pinch hit that he had, especially, should have merited that. But Martin Maldonado, defensive mastermind, is the key to the Astros pitching. Everyone knows this because you're constantly told about it. It's one of those things that just constantly discussed online in particular. It's not really a whole lot of reasoning as to why that's actually the case. It's just an assumption that's made. It's kind of like some of the folks online who would consistently talk about how James Harden's post defense was really good. Does anyone remember those people? I know one of them, Ben DeBose, who I like. Mr. I hate the referees. The only person that hates the referees more than Bill Worrell, Ben DeBose. But Ben was one of those many James Harden stands out there. It's okay, guys. We have a support group for you. You were wrong. I was right. It's okay. The people that were consistently saying, well, James Harden's post defense is great. What, for the two possessions a game that he plays? I know that I always just go off on James Harden rants, and I probably should, you know, see a therapist, get over it. But that used to drive me crazy, like consistently being told, actually, James Harden's defense is a lot better than you think. And actually, it's a gather step. It's not a travel. And actually, James Harden, from a number standpoint, like, you don't understand it. You fail to see it, but, like, from a total shooting percentage, with all the free throw attempts that he gets, and on top of that, with his willingness to drive through the lane, and on top of that, his willingness to take a step back three, you just don't understand what James Harden brings to the table. You just don't get it. You don't know basketball. We do. His post defense. Oh, my God. Hakeem Olajuwon, move over, bro. Not James Harden in the post. Dikembe Mutombo? More like Dikembe Mutombo, because he ain't got bleep on James Harden in the post. One of the greatest defenders of all time. What else do we have comment-wise? 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. I do think that the Astros are going to take care of business tomorrow. I do think, though, that just given the way that the Mariners have played, I don't think that they're going to roll over. I think that there's going to be a scrap at some point. I think it'll happen by the fourth inning. I don't think it'll happen Yordan's first at-bat. I think you got to get through the first one. But depending on how the game goes, say it's like 3-0 Astros or something like that, or 3-1, because I don't think Lance McCullers is going to have a clean sheet tomorrow, just because it's one of those outdoor games, and Seattle's a weird place from a weather perspective. I know it's an afternoon game, and that the weather's actually been pretty warm in Seattle of late, but you get like the marine layer or something. I almost said bleep. Can't say that on the air. I didn't say it, John. I didn't say it. I behaved. Almost did, though. But I feel like by the fourth inning, there will be some sort of a Donnybrook, a scrap, a battle. Maybe not a battle. 713-780-3776. We also got the Yankees and the Guardians. Is anyone going to watch that game? Like, I have zero faith in the – did I say Indians? I have zero faith. My bad. I've been canceled. RIP to the Paul Gallant Show. It was a great 3 weeks. All right? It was fantastic. Couldn't make it without Vanessa because we got canceled by Friday. Avoided saying a swear, but then he said the I word. I have no faith in the Guardians. None. are just a bunch of bums. Really. The American League Central, what a waste of time. What an absolute waste of time. Everyone talks trash about the American League West. Look, at least the Mariners have some promise. And the Astros are the Astros, of course. The AL Central is just completely worthless, much like the entire Midwest. Just completely worthless. Ooh, but we have Chicago, Paul. Yes, and Milwaukee. Shout out to both of those cities. They are fun to visit. But Paul, what about the crime rate? No, shut up. Chicago's a nice place to visit. But like the entire Midwest and the AL Central, hot garbage. Flyovers. Flyovers to your left. Flyovers to your right. I don't know if Big Eye was listening or something like that, but like I just... The American League Central is just such a waste of space, a waste of time, and a waste of money, a waste of resources. Can we sell the Midwest back to Canada? Will we make a profit? Would that fix our inflation? I don't know. 713-780-3776. Paul Gallant's dropping hard eyes today on the show. I'm sorry. Okay? Come on. Cut me some slack here. I'm curious as to whether or not we get more of what you saw in the first inning out of Kyle Tucker. And I'm curious as to how you guys feel about Tucker. Now, Tucker's more of a recent revelation. When I was here 2017, 2018, I don't think people were expecting as much out of Kyle Tucker as they have, especially after the season that he put together last year. You know, he wasn't playing really full-time until 2020. And last year, he was absolutely incredible. And in the postseason last year, he had an OPS of 874. He had 4 home runs. He had 15 runs batted in. Where would you rank him as far as like the Astros that you rely on the most? I don't know what it is, and maybe it's because I'm sort of ageist, I guess. But outside of Yordan... Although, you know, I'm not going to lie. Anyone coming from a country that's not the United States in either the Caribbean or South America, like I'm always wondering, like, how old is he really? This is just a question. Look, they have different paperwork there. It's fine. But Tucker is the one that I look at on this team, not named Altuve, not named Bregman, not named Yordan Alvarez. And I'm always like, I don't know. I guess I just don't have the faith in him that everybody else seems to. Everyone else seems to like him a lot. But it was great to see him get that home run off of Castillo yesterday, and I'm hoping that that's going to lead to him having the kind of postseason that he had last year. To this point, he is 2-for-8, got the home run, got the RBI. He does have 4 strikeouts. Yin and yang. There's something about Kyle Tucker. I don't know what it is. I just can't. Can't fully buy into him being on the same level. And I know that we've had discussions about like what you do with him contract-wise going forward. It seems like he would be someone that's going to ask for maybe more than someone like Yordan Alvarez, who you just signed to the absolute steal of a deal. It's ridiculous that you were able to pull that one off. Credit to James Click. Credit to Jim Crane. That was a hell of a deal. I know that there's some acrimony between the two for whatever reason. That deal was bleeping awesome. And I'm assuming that Click was a big part of that. Great. We got some more Twitch comments. They're talking about like sort of what I was going with James Harden. Kyle Tucker's play, writes King of All Twitches, who is trolling me. Tucker's play is a little too complex for you casual fans. Junior Broncos, Tucker is awesome. 5 tool. I get it, but like, I don't know what it is. I don't appreciate Kyle Tucker's game the way that some of you people do. You know? There's just something. There's just something there. King Tuck is an all-star, writes OTR Sean. We can't end the show with me dumping on Kyle Tucker. Look, it's been a fantastic week. I've enjoyed talking as much baseball as I have this week. Who would have thought I would ever say that? But here we are. It's great to be back here in Houston. I want to say that one more time. You can listen to my rant at 10:30 in case you weren't sure who I am rooting for. But this has been an absolute blast of a week. Going to Minute Maid Park, hanging out with folks in center field yesterday, well, down in an El Tiempo margarita and then a Love Street. It's so good to be home. This team really reminds me of just how awesome I had it when I was here. And I really have appreciated every single second that I have had to cover this team. Not to get all emotional or teary-eyed or anything like that, but it has been an absolute blast. I'm so thankful that we're getting to experience this once again. I hope the Astros are able to close things down tomorrow. Big thanks to everybody who tuned in, Josh Innes, who called in. The Killer Bees are next. You want to go hang out with them at Drift Bar Houston. Come on. Celebrate the victory. Pound the few. It's Friday. Enjoy the weekend. So long. Farewell. We will be back at it on Monday. Go Astros.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.